everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by AJ.
I'm here.
Maddie is here as well.
Believe it or not, I made it this morning, so.
Recovered from illness, new lease of life.
Here we are.
This is it. By the way,
I feel like the last time I missed, I was sick like 4 weeks ago and I haven't been back. I have not been sick for 4 weeks. Just
busy, man. A lot of commitments, you know. Did you have a good Easter, boys?
I feel like that's a better question for Madison. He's got a kid.
We don't celebrate the resurrection.
You celebrate Pioli's resurrection.
That we do celebrate.
And we will celebrate in this episode. This is our late Easter rising. No, Easter rising is a totally different thing, actually. That was like an IRA thing, so we'll quickly move on from that. I think it was IRA. Anyway, before we dive into this week's episode, in which we've got a win to recap against Fiorentina at the Stadio Artemio Franchi, and we have a game to preview, the Lecce game, which comes up at the weekend. We want to say thank you, as always, to our Substack founding members, Des Windsor-McGlynn, Ali Tarinti, Matt Moritz-Pullman, Joey Gawler, Kevin MJ, Mats, Luke Villano, Raul Escobar, Rajat, and Carlo Fassi. If you hear those names read out every week and you wonder what it's all about and you wonder what the Substack's all about, here's a nice visual aid to help you. If you're listening on Audioboom, don't worry, I'm going to talk through it. But this is an example of the kind of bonus content that we're offering over on the Substack, which Isaac runs and does a very good job with. Probably the best example that we've got down there in the bottom left, if you're watching on screen, is that we offer early access to some of the exclusives that we get. So you see there, the SM exclusive, we received some information from a source saying that we are in negotiations over signing someone from Celtic on a free transfer. Pretty talented kid from what I've seen. I am not going to spoil any more than that. Go read it if you want to find out what it's all about. But yeah, that went out early access on the Substack. So you get the juicy bits of information before anybody else. As you see in the top left there, we did a little reaction bonus podcast last week to the news that Olivier Giroud is likely to leave us and go to LAFC. Bottom right is one of Isaac's series that he's got going where he interviews journalists that cover Milan. This week it was the turn of CalcioMercato.com's Daniele Longo. Really good interview where he talks about the good side and the bad side to working as a journalist connected to a club that you really care about. And he also gave us some information on what he thinks is going to happen in the summer. So definitely worth checking that out. Then there's a newsletter that you'll see in the top right, which was a little bit of a preview of the Fiorentina game and how things have gone over the international break. There's also a bulletin in that. So if you can't be bothered keeping up with the website every day, as you should do, that compiles all the best stories from the week. And then the bonus article this week was about the pursuit of a new centre forward and how realistically every option, because of the money that we're going to have to pay out, would be a gamble for us. And who are the gambles worth taking? So that is a good mixed weekly cycle over on the Substack, the bonus content that we put out. Link in the description if you want to go check it out, and you can try a week for free to see if you like it. We thank you to everybody who has subscribed, and again to the founding members. And let's dive into the episode. Back from the international break, Saturday night in Florence against Fiorentina at the Stadio Artemio Franchi. I wasn't confident going into this one. AJ, you predicted a W. A 3-1
did I?
W? Yeah, I think you predicted us to win. You might even pick 2-1. I have to go back.
I honestly don't know, but I thought we were going to lose the morning of, so...
Next season, right, here's what we're going to do. Next season, I'm going to make a note of the predictions. And we're going to do a league table. And because, you know, we're in and out of episodes, we can do the winner on like a points per game type thing, you know. And we'll make it a bit of fun. Might even bring some betting into it just to add a little bit of spice to that.
No, I'm an addict.
Right, any betting sponsors want to reach out to us, you know, let us know. We'd be really
happy.
Look,
we all have a Tonali jersey, okay?
Yeah, BetMGM, whatever. We've got Chris Rock doing the adverts over here now, so get him in or whatever. But yeah, this was a tough one on paper, I think, because, you know, Fiorentina in and around that eighth place, as they always are, but they caused some problems for the bigger teams this season. They always do. They play a good brand of football. They've got some talented forwards. Our defence is shaky. We had no Teo Hernandez. We were worried about how players might come back from international duty. Ironically, the way that this game went was that we played, I would say, very well in the first 45 minutes. Had the better of the chances, should probably have buried a couple of them. And then we didn't play as well in the second 45, but that's when we got the goals that won the game. But I thought, job well done.
Yeah, I actually didn't enjoy this game, like even a little bit. You know, the first half, we had a lot of opportunities, a lot of wasted chances. And when that happens and it extends the entire half, as a longtime Milan fan, that typically spells a late defeat. So I was bracing myself for that. Obviously, then there was like three goals inside 7 minutes to start the second half. So it's all good. Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot to discuss with this one. Well, yeah, I had a great goal. I really liked his goal. There was a big lapse of concentration on their goal. I don't remember the two players at fault on our end, but
literally all of them.
Okay,
it was fair enough. Terrible.
Yeah, I'll give you that. And then who had our second? Oh, Loftus-Cheek.
It was the first. And then Loftus-Cheek
was
the second.
That was the second. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Frantic 7 minute period, as you say, that ended up being the deciding period in the second half. The starting lineup, he made four changes to the team that beat Hellas Verona in the game before the break. Obviously, Florenzi had to come in for Teo. No arguments really on that front for me. I think he's the natural substitution. You're not going to play Terracciano over there. He's just not had enough regular minutes recently. So, you know, I think it had to be Florenzi there. Then Xiao came in to partner Tomori over Gabia playing. We'll probably come on to his performance at some point. Chukwueze over Pulisic, which was obviously largely down to the fact that, as Pioli revealed after the game, Pulisic came back quite late from international duty and said, "I only feel like I could play a part of the game." Great stuff. I love it when players are honest and say, I don't overwork yourself. You know, we've got a week between games now. You rest up. We'll play you for 30 minutes or however long it ended up being. A bit less than that, I think. And, we'll have you 100% for the next one. And also it helps that Chukwueze had one of his better games. And then Olivier Giroud came up front. One of the things I noticed in the first half, you may or may not have any thoughts on this, but it was really, really noticeable. There's an article on the website about this. It's under the match. The press changed to a 4-4-2. I think it was mainly just to sort of compact it and sort of, I don't know, like Giroud was dropping in quite a lot, basically. Giroud was basically playing on the halfway line at times. But then something else I noticed was that Leao was up front playing centrally for quite a lot of it. Then Reinders was round on the left wing. It worked. It looked good because Leao was stretching the defenders with those runs in behind and he didn't have to do as much pressing work on the flanks. And Reinders looked really good attacking the corner of the box kind of thing. I thought that looked good.
Yeah, it was weird, to be honest. I recognized that too, and I thought, not sure about this one. And obviously it worked out. I still think, you know, by halftime, you recognized how many times we were able to get behind their defenders. They were playing a really high line, and their center backs are not quick. Both our wingers, Chukwueze and Leao, are rapid fast. And then there's Giroud, you know. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I'm thinking, this might be another good game for Okafor. You know, bring Okafor on at halftime. Because Chukwueze and Leao were getting on the other side of him each run, you know. If you bring on a third player who could do it, it's 2v3. You're going to win every single time. So that would have been the tactical change I would have made. He eventually swapped his route for Jovic late game, like 88 minute. I think Leao kind of signaled for a substitution. He had that one challenge early on in the first half where he like hit his knee weird.
Didn't like the look of that. That looked painful. It looked bad. That could be how your groin goes.
Yeah, but he stayed on a lot longer than I thought he would. So. Same. Hopefully he's still good. I haven't seen anything saying otherwise, so I'm sure it's not a big deal. Probably was just precautionary, but again, another player listening to their body and telling the coach what they need, which is good. Mm-hmm. But I would have done that, and I would have brought Pulisic on for Leao actually and moved Okafor to the center.
That's probably what I'd have done. Although the one thing I'd say about Jovic, so obviously I think the Leao sub came first because that was on around the hour mark. And then with Jovic, it's like against his old team who let him go for nothing. Maybe he'd have been fired up with a point to prove. And also he does work hard off the ball, like he keeps the pressure up. But to be forced into some big changes like that while it's a one-goal lead, while the game's still in the balance, it, you know, we had to deal with that. And I think it perhaps contributed to the pressure that we were under in the closing stages. Like, it was not a pretty finale.
I was definitely waiting for the game to end, like actively calling for him to blow the whistle early, you know. I was looking for an AFCON moment where he just calls it at 85 minutes played.
And then gets him back out and calls it again on 88. that tournament was so funny, man.
Pulisic had the offside goal with the...
Yeah. You should have released the pass earlier.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I mean, I called it offside as soon as he made the pass. I was like, don't even celebrate this. It's, it was obviously off.
Musa as well, wasn't it? It could have been the combo of the CONCACAF winners.
Yeah. Champions of the nation.
I thought Musa had a good game off the bench as well. There was a good moment that was picked up on broadcast where Pioli went over to him and he looked like he was shouting at him. But in actual fact, he then just broke into a smile and gave him a massive hug as if to say, that's what I'm talking about. Because he picked up the ball and drove forward so many times to get us out of pressure. And that's what could be a useful role for him while he's not starting. But hopefully he gets a few more starts. We need to talk about, I suppose, the chances that we spurned in the first half. Giroud missed a couple of good ones. One where he headed over from a corner from a good position. Mm-hmm. And then one where Chukwueze span his man and provided a cut back to around the penalty spot. And Giroud hit it first time, tried to sort of open boot it, and it was straight at the keeper. Liao had that one where he cut in on the right and he just angled a shot wide of the far post. And then Liao stood up that cross for Chukwueze, and his header at the far post was actually well saved by Terracciano.
What do we think of the Loftus Cheek goal? How much of that
nearly
was luck?
Yeah, he fucked it, didn't he? Yeah. How much of it was luck? I mean, yeah, Milinkovic slips. One thing I will say is don't slip there. But also, players were slipping all over all night. Mm-hmm. It was like really bad for that. So I don't know if they'd overwatered the pitch or players.
Yeah, I don't know if Liao's thought process was he had to do a back heel there. Mm. But I do know that if he were to make a normal pass in front of him, Milinkovic does stop it with that slide, you know? So it had to be the back heel. And it found him. It found off his cheek. It wasn't the prettiest, but at the end of the day, he put it in, so.
The reason I'll give full credit to Liao for that assist, rather than saying it was like mostly luck or whatever, is the fact that he won the header in the first place when the ball was punted long out to Chuck. I think it was Chuck, who then threaded it back through to Liao. And I guess what Milinkovic's body position was ready for and why he was slightly off-footed, which is why he slipped, is for Liao to hit it first time with his right foot and sort of hook it back across goal. But then in actual fact, you know, he digs out the little back heel cross, which puts it behind him. And that's why he has to try shift his body. His legs go from under him. Loftus-Cheek, I don't know why he's not hitting that first time, to be honest. But I don't know if he tried to, and he took a swing at it, and it ended up looking like a first touch. But, I mean, he couldn't miss from there, could he?
He probably thought it was going to come in front of him.
Yeah.
So he was just like off balance on it. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, same as Milinkovic, the reason that he slipped, but did well to, I guess, in the end, bring it under control. Most important thing there was the positioning. Like, we had a few situations in the first half where we put dangerous crosses across the face of goal and nobody gambled on being there at the near post or whatever. So it's good to see RLC keep getting in those positions. 9 calendar goals for 2020, calendar year goals, 10 in total. He's now equaled his best season at Chelsea, and obviously he's got a bit of runway yet to improve that. So fantastic stuff from him. The equaliser was poor. Really, really bad defending. We've done this quite a lot, I feel, where we've scored and then completely let the other team off the hook straight away, you know, with bad defensive shit. It would probably be a theme for the rest of the second half as well, where we just didn't know how to deal with them when they had runners from midfield, especially when they brought on like Nico Gonzalez. There was a period in the last 10 minutes where they had about 6 forwards on the pitch and they were really going for it. So that's why I'm almost impressed that we managed to hold out. Alfred Duncan picks up the ball sort of midway through our half and he's just allowed to walk forward in a straight line and pick out his spot in the corner. No fault attached to Maignan for this one. And
who had an incredible game.
He had a really good game. Yeah. Yeah, he did have a good game. He made a good save from Belotti. Just won't fall for Belotti, would it? Like, he was...
Never will.
He had about six chances or whatever. And, yeah, none of them ended up in. We had a couple of sloppy giveaways that he failed to capitalise on. And but, yeah, he made a good save from Belotti and a good one from Mandragora as well later on. Or Mandragora, as the commentators call him. I don't know which is correct. And then the Leão goal, I thought he'd overplayed it. I'm not going to lie. At first, I was shouting at my screen, square it. Chukwueze would have a tap-in into an empty net. And yet, that's why I'm not a professional footballer and certainly not a winger.
Yeah, he just... it was weird because you anticipated either the pass or the shot about two touches before he actually took it, you know? So All of a sudden, you just see him walk in front of the goalkeeper. Like, he didn't do it... any like skill move, little trick step or anything. He just kept dribbling. The keeper just missed it. I don't know. It was very strange, but
little drop of the shoulder in there, which I think was important, you know, as if I'm going to pull back and shoot. And then he didn't, he just took that touch around him and slotted it in. It was one of those runs as well, but because he essentially just went in a straight line, like Duncan did for their goal, he picked up the ball and just ran in a straight diagonal, but straight line around the keeper and then put it in. It looked silky on the eye, like that was him in full flow kind of thing. And yeah, I thought he had one of his best games, to be honest, Leão, in the 60-odd minutes that he got. And then, yeah, we rode our luck a little bit at the end. Maignan, a couple of saves, a lot of pressure from them in the closing stages. One thing I was a bit annoyed about, and perhaps this was a consequence of the subs, is that they had essentially two defenders left on the field at the end, and we never really mounted much of a counter-attacking threat. There was that one that Pulisic scored where he was offside, but that was probably all-round bad execution. Struggled to kill that off a little bit. Sort of like the Verona game as well. And, you know, we've had the games where we really could run up a 3-1, a 4-1 and make a statement, and instead we're sort of hanging on at the end. And I think that's what's left people with a bit of a bittersweet taste after this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that sums it up.
Yeah,
I don't know. Madison, you want to add anything?
I've just been sitting here silent. No, I don't. I mean, I was like, are they going to ask me anything? Nah, I'm just going to sit here.
Can I ask Maddie
Maddie's first words is 17 minutes in. I'm good.
What did you think about our utilization of the half spaces and adaptation to a mixed 4-4-2 press?
You just asked me a very difficult question that I don't know the answer to. I thought, you know, we missed a lot of chances in the first half, but I also don't think we've created that many chances in a very long time. So I'm just hoping that the team's on the right step and we learn how to finish those chances in the future, and that means that Drew is not starting. So
I feel like this game we would have probably put 3 or 4 past him had we been able to field Teo. You know, it just seemed like the type of game that was begging for his overlaps, you know. But not to say Florenzi did a bad job.
Or maybe we created those chances because Teo wasn't on the field and we weren't doing the overlaps.
Maybe.
Yeah, there's a bit. I thought they let us off a little bit. Like I do the key battles piece on the day of the game where it's like 5 player v player battles. And I said the key one was going to be Florenzi against Nico Gonzalez because Gonzalez has scored double figures goals for them this season. He plays on the right. We're playing with a makeshift left back. If he can get some joy down that side, then we'd be in trouble, and they didn't start him. Probably a consequence of having flown back over from international duty, or maybe he was carrying something, I don't know. But I thought Fiorentina's starting lineup was a bit strange as well. Mm-hmm. Duncan started and got the goal, so you can't say that was a bad decision, but they left Artemelo out, who I think has been pretty good this season. I don't know. I think maybe Italiano Galaxy brained it a little bit in playing against us, but, you know. What did the XG say for this one, by the way?
We were over 3.
Really?
Yeah. Like 3.9 or something.
Oh, here we go. So the ones that we put out, it's 2.9 for us, but, you know, they vary from site to site. We had 55% possession. They had 17 shots to our 14. We had 10 shots on target to their 7. We had 5 big chances to their 3, which I think is...
genuinely, though, when was the last time we had double-digit on-target shots? Like, I really don't know. It feels like it's been a while.
Yeah, a long time.
We've had plenty of games where there's been, like, 25 shots total, but it's usually, like, 6 on target, 4 on target, you know?
Yeah, we created plenty. And this has always been the thing that we say about sometimes it can be a blessing to play against teams like Fiorentina, teams in and around there who are still fighting for points and fighting for wins to try climb up the table. Therefore, they'll allow a bit of space at the back that we're quite good at exploiting, rather than teams who are scrapping for their lives or who are mid-table like Udinese or whatever. You know, it can be better for us to play teams who are more proactive. We'll see if that's the case in Derby, I suppose, that's coming up. Like, because everything rests on that and the Roma game now. But anyway, tops and flops, and then we'll put this one in the books. Top for me, I'm going to give it to... I'm going to give it to Leao. It has to be him. Main creative force, scored a good goal. It was a sort of leader's performance. You know, there was times when he was out there and you just thought, oh yeah, everything's going to go through him. And it's one of those days where something's going to happen every time.
Leao's obviously a good pick. I'm going to go with Maignan, though. I think any other keeper on our roster, we either draw or lose that game. He made quite a few big saves. You know, he bailed us out towards the end of the game where they had 15, 20 minutes to end the game of just attack after attack after attack, and Mike just wasn't letting anything in outside of the one Duncan goal, which, like you said yourself, wasn't anything to do with him. You know, it was
lovely shot, really, from a midfielder, actually.
So I'm going to give it to Mike.
I'm also going to go with Leao. I feel like he's been quiet for so much of the season, and he was just explosive. So,
I want to give an honourable mention as well to Loftus-Cheek, not just because of the goal, but he looked well up for it as well. He won a lot of duels. I don't have the exact number, but it was a battling performance from him, and I think he contributed pretty well. And then Chukwueze had probably his best start for us, to be honest. Reinders looked confident on the ball. There were some real positive performances in this. Gabia came off the bench, which leads into my flop. But he looked a bit more assured than my flop of the match, which is Malik Chow. Jesus.
He's suspended, right, for Lecce?
Oh, is he? I don't know. I know Loftus-Cheek is.
He is.
Oh, maybe it was Loftus-Cheek.
Loftus-Cheek was 100% deliberate, by the way. Kick the ball away or something. Tomori kicked the ball away, and that shouldn't have been a yellow card, but no ban for him. But Loftus-Cheek did something where it was like, ah, you're serving your ban for the Lecce game, so we've got you back for the bigger games, you know? But yeah, Chow for me.
I don't remember who... I'm going to give it to Giroud. He missed so many shots in the beginning.
Yeah,
Giroud's a good pick. I can't remember. I think with Chow, it was... There's a couple of hairy moments, but one in particular where, like, he's not learned his lesson and he kicked someone up into the air just outside the edge of our box. It's like, can you stop diving in like that, please? Because you're lanky and you're not going to be first to that ball. He just looks a bit rusty mentally, more so than, and physically a half a yard behind it. I've noticed on social media he's been getting quite a lot of, I'd say hate, but people are just like, we can't play Chow at the moment. He's unusable at the moment. I think that's a bit harsh, and the only way that he's going to get better is with repeated starts. But Gabia did come on and look a lot better than him. So that's something to consider with the big games that we've got to come. Let's move on. We've got a game to preview. Lecce stopped the mighty Roma machine yesterday. Drew 0-0 with them. Yeah,
I didn't see a single scoreline from Michigan.
So we are now 47 points ahead of sixth place or something like that. Feels like that. It's probably actually about 16.
47, that doesn't sound right.
No, 47 was an exaggeration. So we are now 13 points above Roma, who were in fifth. And because fifth is likely to get Champions League, we are now 15 points inside of the top five. So... 15 point gap to Atalanta in sixth, who do have a game in hand, so it could return to that. But yeah,
so win three games and we're good.
I mean, we're in, aren't we?
Yeah.
I mean, you look at that, man. 20 wins, 5 draws, 5 losses. It's really not been like this. Is we're at a similar pace to the Scudetto season.
I think we're ahead of it now, aren't we?
Yeah, we might well be ahead of it. Although maybe not, because didn't we win the last... Did we win 7 of the last 9 games in the Scudetto season?
Something like that,
although we won 6 in a row in all comps now.
How many games are left? 8?
Eight. Yeah, it's just one of those things where, like, you look at it... Look, we got 20 wins. That's huge. But 5 losses and 5 draws just shouldn't have happened. And when you look at the draws, like, I don't know, the Atlanta one, it was, again, gave away a stupid penalty. The Bologna one gave away a stupid penalty in the 90th. You know, it was what was the other one? Sornitana. I probably shouldn't have drawn that. The loss to Atlanta earlier where, again, we conceded in the 95th minute. Like, the Lecce 2-2, that's a good one. Napoli 2-2. Like, there's just been a bunch of drop points throughout the season that shouldn't have been. You know, in an alternate reality, we're probably a lot closer to competing for the top than we are. I mean, at this point, it's out of reach, and that's how the season goes. You know, anytime you drop silly points, like, it comes back to bite you. But, yeah, it hasn't been the world's worst season. It's just been some bad moments that have added up because Inter haven't slipped at all. So, good on them, but, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It's compounded. Say that again.
That's what happens when you cheat.
Elaborate.
What I got?
Don't elaborate. Oh, we're getting a libel case. Yeah, they're in a ridiculous pace, aren't they? They're still 14 points ahead of us, which is annoying. The possibility is still there that they win the title in the derby. We've got to try and make sure that that doesn't happen. In other words, let's drop points before that so they win it before. But yeah, top four's wrapped up. I think it's almost mathematical now, but we've got to hang on to second. Meanwhile, Juventus's ridiculous 2024 continues. Like, they've fallen off a cliff. We're now 6 points above them, having been 7 points behind them at the end of January. So that's been a remarkable overturn. Yeah. Overhaul,
they've gained really. 6 points since then total.
Yeah, I always had a feeling, even when we were seven behind, that they could potentially collapse, because when Juve have a couple of bad results, it turns really, really toxic. Maybe a bit like us, but they're like, well, Allegri's going. He might even be sat before the end of the season. The star players don't want to be here anymore. Like, the whole media narrative turns very sensationalist around them, when really, for their squad, I think being in the top four this season is not bad. I think I picked them to finish fifth in preseason predictions because I'm just not that convinced that they've got much depth anywhere. But yeah, Lecce this season is up to date. They are in 13th place in the table with 6 wins, 11 draws and 13 defeats from their 30 games. They've only scored 26 goals. They've allowed 45, so that's a negative 19 goal difference. They had Roberto De Versa in charge until the 11th of March. They went on a really bad run up until then where, if I can calculate this correctly, they had 9 defeats in 12. So they were sliding down the table towards the bottom three, decided to make a change, and they brought in Luca Gotti on the 13th of March, who's had 2 games, a 1-0 win away against Salernitana, and then that 0-0 draw against Roma on April Fool's Day. We're at home for this one. It's a Saturday early kickoff. So early as in it's the 3 o'clock kickoff Central European time. So how are we feeling?
A lot better. Yeah, I think it'll be fine. You know, I'm looking at the first game when we were away. We scored 2 early. We were up 2-0. Fucked it. Ended 2-2. But you look at that game. This was a game that had Pobega, Krunic, and early season Chukwueze all starting. Liao came off after 10 minutes injured. Giroud got a red card. Like, there was a lot of bullshit in this game that kind of added up to dropping points. This is also the one where Lecce scored a third goal in like the 94th minute, but it got waved offside. So, yeah, this was probably the lowest point of the season, and I just don't see a world where the boys do that to us again. So, I think we're going to smoke
in a world them. Where we don't want Inter to win the Scudetto during the Derby. We're going to draw this game.
I think we're going to try our absolute best to win every game and hope they drop points. And then if they don't, by the game before the Derby, maybe.
I just don't think we're going to beat them.
What fixtures have they got? They've got Udinese away and Cagliari at home.
Lecce and Sassuolo. We're not dropping points to either.
I think we're both winning at each of our games, yeah. Aren't we? That's not good.
Yeah, not ideal.
Yeah. Let's hope for points deduction or something, I guess. Lecce this season. Yeah. Lecce this season, stats-wise, their top scorer has 5 goals, and it's Nikola Krstović, Montenegrin forward. They got Roberto Piccoli, who's on 4 goals. Udin, Almqvist, Banda, Gendry, all following in behind. They struggled to score goals this season. They're obviously on less than one a game on average. In the game against Roma yesterday, they played with a 4-4-2, which is interesting. You don't see many teams playing with a 4-4-2 anymore. But they've got some decent players, I think. Falcone in goal can turn into, you know, like prime Neuer sometimes. Bachirotto is a pretty good, experienced Serie A pro now. Gallo, the left back, Milan have been linked with before as a deputy to Teo. We've also been linked with Dorgu, who played left midfield in this game ahead of the summer. Almqvist played on the right. Gendry caused us some problems in that first game. And then, yeah, Krstović and Piccoli up top are their two top scorers. And, yeah, they stopped Roma from scoring, who have the third best attack in the league. So I think they're going to come and park it, to be honest.
Yeah, Falcone's actually in really good form. I'm looking at his last 4 games. Clean sheet against Roma, 8.6 rating, Fat Mob. Clean sheet against Sornitana, 8.2 rating. Clean sheet against Hellas Verona, 7.0 rating. 1-1 against Frosinone, 7.6 rating. And then there's a 4.8 rating and a 4-0 thrashing loss to Inter. So hopefully the Milan clubs could bookend his performances. But yeah, so I mean, he's coming in hot, good for him, but none of those teams have a Leao.
I was just gonna come on to this. Given that we have the first leg of the Europa League quarter final in the midweek that follows, and the two games either side are obviously the Lecce game and then Sassuolo, are we gonna see some rotation for this?
Yeah, I'm sure we will. Remember last season, yeah.
So what does logical rotation look like? You'd think with Teo having a good rest, he should be okay to come back in and play. Maignan stays in. Mm-hmm. Gabia probably comes in. Centre-back.
I think we probably see more rotation in the defence in midfield than we do in the offence.
We need to keep scoring. That's for sure.
I feel like we're going to see another 9 changes like Pioli does. It's going to be like Okafor, Jovic, Chukwueze, Musa, with Loftus-Cheek, I don't know, some weird midfield. Like,
in theory, so we've got a week between these games. Play Saturday against Fiorentina, Saturday against Lecce. All the players should be 100% by the time this Lecce game comes around. And then I believe that all players, when they're 100%, can play 2 games in a week. So could we see 2 strong starting lineups, Lecce, Roma, and then the mass rotation for the Sassuolo game? Because what we did last season...
That's how we'd see it.
Yeah. What we did last season.
I think we see rotation this weekend before the Roma game.
I think we need to stay on a hot streak for that first leg against Roma, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because the first leg's at home, so we need to win. We need to go there with a lead, ideally. Even though I'd probably still be confident if we drew that first leg. We ideally need to win that first leg. So I think you keep playing the hot hand. That being said, you know, given the changes that were made, Teo will probably come back in. We'll see about the centre-backs. We've got options in midfield now. Bennacer Reinders seems to be the double pivot that he likes, but we've got Musa clawing away, and obviously Adli, he seems to like using him in a deeper role now. You've got Pulisic, who will probably come back in, but might have to manage his minutes. So Chukwueze is now looking in good form again. Got a nice option there. The one thing is, obviously, Loftus-Cheek. There is no Loftus-Cheek for this game, so he'll have to be changed. For whom? Maybe Reinders? Maybe move Reinders up and then play Musa, Bennacer, something like
that. That's probably exactly what it'll be.
Yeah.
But we don't have any other options, right? Who else?
You get a bit funky and play Adli in the role that he started.
Forgot all about Adli, yeah.
There might be some shouts to see Pulisic finally play as a 10.
You don't want that.
I keep hearing that he's better on the left or as a 10 than on the right. I
feel like you haven't heard that since he scored 8 to however many goals he's on now.
Yeah, it's the best season of his career as a right winger.
He said it, though. After he won the Gold Cup, he was like, I didn't think I'd feel this comfortable playing on the right. Like, I feel better on the left. But I think, you know, just
let the master tactician of Pioli work his magic. All right. And
Let him
keep
cook.
Pulisic on the right.
Hmm.
Left. Fuck.
No, yeah. Keep on the right.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. When you like look at it on paper, I'm like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, I guess the other thing is, you know, hopefully Liao hasn't picked up a problem after the game. There's nothing that came out suggesting that he has, but maybe Okafor and Jovic could come in. Don't know, we'll see. Dilemmas. It's good that we've got players fit and available. It's just the defence that's once again a couple of absentees, which is annoying. Prediction?
3-0.
I'm going to say 1-1 because their goalie is going to have an amazing game.
1-1? Oh, dropped points. I'm going to say 2-0. I'm going to say 2-0, and I think we labour in the first half. I think two goals come in the second half. Pulisic gets one, and the other's a penalty, which Teo scores. Because she
well, Pulisic takes the penalties now.
Teo will take it if he's on the pitch.
No, they remember after Teo and Giroud missed theirs, they said Pulisic's the new penalty taker, and then we just haven't had one since.
But then didn't Liao come forward and say, I'll take them? And Pioli said, no, you won't after the game.
Yeah.
That was a bit of a mess, really.
Like, at the time, Liao was on, what, two goals that season? Pioli's like, nah,
he's
bro.
He's going to those stats.
Yeah.
We go so long between penalties, though, that you sort of forget what happened with the last one.
It's hard to keep track of them because there's so few, and then you always hear penalty for Milan, but it's typically Inter that's getting it, so yeah.
Rigore per l'Inter. Let's move on, do a bit of so talking point.
Okay.
No, we'll do the listener questions, but just okay. As a heads up, the big talking point, obviously, for this week, I guess, this recent period, is that. And it follows on from a Sky report last night saying that Pioli is now pretty likely to remain as the head coach for 2024-25 season, which is the last year of his contract because of this good run of form that we've had in 2024. Now, we'll save that for the bonus podcast. So if you want to hear our thoughts on that, then tune in later in the week. And as for the listener questions, get them up. Gregory Peck asks, as a Serie A fan, when you hear other YouTube football pundits, in quotation, who oddly enough work for Sky Sports, say that Brighton can win Serie A, do we even care about these comments? How does it actually make you feel about the game in this YouTube space? And I guess how Serie A is perceived by fans of other leagues.
I think Serie A is perceived well, but also don't listen to English pundits because they think that England's winning the World Cup every single year. They, you know, just
like every year.
Every year.
Yeah, that's how
even
crazy
the off years there.
Even
the off years, they think
even if it was played every year, we wouldn't win it.
Yeah, I agree with that. To be honest, it doesn't bother me too much. That's after, I don't know, 15 years of listening to the English pundits say some bullshit. It's just like, what's the next soundbite? You know, I recognize the sports entertainment business is a lot more lucrative than the sports analytic business. So if you could get a reaction, you could get money, and that's what it is. So the more you react to it, the more you pay them, the more they're going to do it.
I don't even know if that's why English pundits are the way that they are. I think
no,
it's that delusional.
It's true.
So
at the end of the day, like, it doesn't affect me. I'm going to watch Milan whether we're in Serie B or the Champions League. So I don't care.
Are you going to watch in Serie B?
I think with English pundits, like, there's a distinction to be made between, you know, English speaking pundits, in which case, like, everyone comes into it, even the US panels who have got a bit of stick.
Too.
Yeah, they've got a bit of stick recently as well, versus Premier League pundits who are not always English. So, like, there's weird overlaps and stuff that go on. I do think generally fans of Premier League teams massively overestimate their sides.
Yeah.
But then probably so do we sometimes to an extent, you know?
Yeah, of course.
It's natural. But the difference is that because English is the main language in the world, the English language content pool, if you like, is oversaturated. So what do you have to do to drive clicks and get traction and revenue, everything that comes with it? Call it the TalkSport model. which is basically where you have a pundit on who says something ridiculous, so they get people calling in to tell them that they're ridiculous. It's almost like Zlatan. Mm-hmm. He says daft shit to make sure that he stays in the headlines, you know? Even though I think majority of it is a facade. Don't get me wrong, I think there are genuinely delusional fans of all clubs and people who are in like quite high positions who probably shouldn't be because they don't necessarily read the game that well. But in terms bringing it back to how Serie A is perceived, I mean, that one guy took a load of heat and rightly so for saying that Brighton would dog walk Roma. I also thought Brighton would give Roma a much better game than what they did. They lost it in the first leg by putting Lewis Dunk on Romelu Lukaku. I was actually quite happy to see that happen, you know, because it's like, Brighton, come on, who are you to be talking like that? It's your first mm-hmm. foray into Europe and you're talking about how you're easily better than...
well, there's also, I can't remember who it was, but when the Champions League came out, they said Newcastle were the favorites to win the group, but then they got fourth, so...
And then they beat PSG 4-1 at home, and it was like, we're the best team in this group. And then they couldn't beat us or Dortmund, you know? So it's that's the way it goes. But it's what happens. Like, the fans of these clubs, your Newcastles and your Brightons, have gone a long time without any kind of success. So they're going to get a bit carried away. You know, like when we won the title, we're talking about, well, how long until we challenge for the Champions League? And then we get to the semi-final next season. It's like, here we go, boys. We're building something special here. Yeah. And then you can dip so quickly back into, like, the reality of football. And it's like, we can't...
Yeah, but when we got carried away, there was a legitimate reason. A title and then a semi-final of the Champions League. I mean, that's a bit different than just qualifying for the Champions League for the first time in 80 years. You know, like, it's... Mm. There's a big, big jump in level there. Like the first year we got back into the Champions League, we all said we'd be really grateful if we just made the knockouts. Mm-hmm. You know,
and when we got the group that we got, we were like, "Nah, probably not happening."
Yeah, exactly. Even but then the next season, we said, "Oh, we're gonna make it," and we did. We made it to the semis. So,
yeah, last year we were like, "Just make it to the round of 16," right? Like. Don't ask for too much because we know it's a small build. It's not like you qualify and you're like, we're winning the entire thing. Like, no, you're not. Mm-hmm. No, this isn't a Leicester City thing. It's just, you know.
Yeah, it's not FIFA. You
know, and then another thing about Milan that constantly gets mentioned by our fans, but also by, I think, fans from outside of Italy is like this Milan European DNA type thing. How, like, it's a bit like Liverpool. They might not be the best team in their league or whatever, but once they get into those knockout rounds in Europe, their DNA and this aura carries them through. I think it's an interesting narrative. Maybe there's something to it psychologically. I don't know. But when we got into the quarterfinals of the Champions League last year, it was like we were so many points behind Napoli and we just felt like we could do it because they've not been here before. And as a club, we've been here a lot. So
very few of our players had.
yeah, exactly. And it's all strange how it works. Basically, there's no consistency in football narrative. Everything has nuance to it. Are Premier League / English pundits worse than most? Maybe. I don't listen to the Sky, to the Italian panels and whatnot, but I gather they can be pretty bad. But yeah, what as a little spin-off to this, where do you think we'd finish in the Premier League? Current squads, like
this season,
yeah.
I think. Well, hold on, let me pull up the prem table right now.
So just as a little, just while you ponder that, I just want to throw out there that Inter, for example, are runaway leaders in Serie A, and they lost in the Champions League. I know it's different in the Champions League over a league season, and there's more sample size and stuff, but they lost to an Atletico side who were fourth in La Liga and are in turmoil, and they deserve to lose. So, like, does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, but do we think we're worse than Lecce and we had a 2-2 with them? You know, like, you could
not pick out single games. Yeah.
But look at the current table. I think we'd be somewhere fourth or fifth. You know, I think Liverpool, Arsenal, and City are well and above us at the moment. But I do think we're better than Brighton, Newcastle, West Ham, United. Tottenham and Villa, it might be a toss-up. Villa's on a good run. I think we could probably get the better of them. But yeah, I think probably that fourth to fifth spot right now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah. And I think that people would expect us to say, oh, we'd be up there challenging. But, you know, we're realistic about it. It's a different league, isn't it? If you wanted to expand it to the Bundesliga, would we be up there fighting with Leverkusen for the title? That's, like, more difficult to call. I think yes. You know, I think a more open league would suit us. But then La Liga, it's like, will Girona have had this miraculous season? So would we be above them? I don't know. But with the Premier League thing, it's always...
We struggle in La Liga, to be honest.
A lot more technical, isn't it? And I don't feel like technicality is our strong suit. It's more counter-attacks and athleticism and individual play. Mike Golisano asks, and maybe this is a bit of a talking point as well, with regards to Sandro Tonali, is there any way that Newcastle can come after us for a refund of sorts? So I don't know if you boys saw, but the FA have charged Tonali as well now with apparently 50 breaches of their betting regulations that happened after he joined them. So from August to November of last year.
After the first investigation.
Yeah. Apparently he placed one of the bets on the day that he got taken in while he was with Italy's training camp, which is wild. But that it's not a joke. It's not a laughing matter. That to me proves that he has got a genuine addiction. And it's not good. He needs help. He's getting help. He's on an 8-month rehabilitation program. Newcastle apparently are hoping that...
Sorry. It's just the silly thing to me.
I'm talking about gambling as someone who put like 20 quid on over the weekend and won fuck all back.
That's what I'm saying. Year on sports bets, I'm at least down 200. I don't know.
Oh, I'm down so far. I actually stopped betting because I was like, I don't know why I do this. Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
So you're gonna go through my DraftKings. I've never won a bet, so don't take advice from me. But that's because I exclusively do like 20 leg parlays.
Oh, that's the way to do it, man. When the fun
that makes it so much more exciting.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know what? The sad thing is, I'm usually only off by like one or two games. Mm. So I keep thinking, I'm going to get it soon. And then I'm riding off into the sunset. That's it.
Yeah, because I win $1,000.
The best one is when you put on like a multi-team bet and they're at different kickoff times. Yeah. And you're thinking, right, this early one's a nailed on. And then the first game lets you down. So the rest.
That's how it was last week, dude. I put a bunch of over-under goals for all of Serie A on Saturday, and then a couple Prem games, and I did a money line for March Madness, and I never bet on college sports, but it was Marquette, who was like second rank, versus North Carolina State, who was 11th, and I was like, well, that's a shoe-in. First game, dude, they get smoked, and I'm like, all right, there goes that. Got everything else right. But sweet, love it. So, yeah,
don't never bet on March Madness.
Nah, it's so stupid. Yeah,
I've seen people doing their brackets and stuff, and like, there's that much that can go wrong. Surely it's just potluck.
No one's ever had a perfect bracket, like in the history of brackets.
Really?
Yeah. There was a year...
Well, like, you had Oakland who upset Kentucky, right? Like,
something involving UConn.
Yeah, right? Usually by the second or third round, there's zero accurate ones left. There was a year where Warren Buffett offered $1 billion to anyone who got a perfect bracket. Million. And I think he
does it every year.
Yeah, it's a lot, but
should be a billion. Only if you put a bet on all of the games, it'd be really hard because obviously the amount of teams involved, but I wonder what the odds return would be. It's one of those odds that I think the bookmaker would ring you up and be like, what are you doing? Because there are those bets.
Sir.
There are those bets. Like, do you know something? Anyway, back to Tonali. Get well soon. He's suffering from an addiction. On a serious note, hopefully on the road to recovery, he's serving his ban at the moment. He's not going to be back before the European Championships. Apparently Newcastle are hoping internally that this new breach, these new charges... Because they happened before he was charged the first time in November, that it will run parallel to the ban, or congruent, I guess, to the ban that he's currently serving, so it won't be extended. I think that the FA will look to play a strong hand here and be like, no, the other ban was that unfortunate Freudian slip there. The other ban was from the Italian FA. You know, we're going to do ours now, rather than saying, oh yeah, what they said's fine, it can run alongside. I think we might not see him for a while longer yet, but we'll wait and see. not too much more to say from there, because obviously it's a bit of a dodgy legal ground. And as for the stuff about Milan knowing, always been denied. Nothing has come out to suggest that Newcastle are going to pursue any kind of refund or that they're going to investigate the transfer. Somebody from within the club did come out and say it's going to change the way that they do business. They're going to do more due diligence on all signings now. But I honestly don't know how you can find something like that out. You know, you can do medical checks on a player. You can do background checks. But you're not to know if someone's placing underhand bets.
If you're going to, like, Newcastle will do due diligence or Milan will? Because if you do due diligence on your own players, you're not going to rat them out for gambling. You're going to tell them to stop.
Yeah, right? That's true.
Also, players might get pissed off. It's like, where's the trust? You know?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, Tonali would still be getting away with it, too, if it wasn't for the Juve guy who came clean and said, hey, I have a problem, and so does Tonali. Like, you know? His buddy's the rat.
Grass. Proper grass.
So funny to me, but yeah.
Yeah.
So anyways, this also ties into the first question of, you know, the English pundits, all the English fans trying to come at Milan for this, like we had anything to do with it. It was like, well, okay, sorry.
We have no idea. Sounds like a you problem.
Yeah, exactly. Like
you bought the man, not just his performances on the pitch. That's nothing to do with us.
Yeah, if you buy a player, who was it? The guy, I mean, this is an extreme example, and actually sad, not just a silly little gambling addiction, but the Salah. Player who Salah, who was it? Newcastle also?
No, it was Cardiff. They were buying Cardiff, him from Nantes, and he died in a helicopter.
Died in the airplane. Died on the way to it, and whatever. I think he finished it, signed the contract, then went home or something, and then died on the way back. I can't remember, but I mean, they still had to pay the transfer fee and stuff. Like
it's an ongoing legal battle. And you know what? It's so difficult, isn't it? Because it was a big money signing for a club like Cardiff. You know, they don't exactly spend. It was to be a club record signing for them, and you obviously don't want to try and taint the memory of the player in any way because it was such tragic circumstances. But then they're like, we've got the receipts, kind of thing. And
I mean, because you look at it from Nantes' point of view, like, we sold you our player, we lost our player, now we don't get him, why would we not get the money, you know? And then, like, that's kind of a businessy way to look at it, which is really shitty, but also Carter's so like, difficult. Look, we didn't get the player, why should we pay you? And it's like, well, nobody has the player. Someone, I don't know, it's a very so murky difficult. Way, but yeah.
Honestly, like, for stuff like that, you just want to get everybody in a room and say, look at the state of this, why can't you just pay half of it? Or something. Like, is there not a meeting point in the middle here where we can all go home and not turn this into a messy legal battle over someone who's died?
Yeah, because and then you know the family's watching that, looking at like, damn, his former club and his new club. Did they really care about him? You know, they're seeing the shit. They're arguing over money when we don't have our son, our husband, blah blah blah, all this stuff. Like, yeah, that's crazy to think. But anyways, do we have happier things to discuss?
One more thing.
Okay, cool. Let's do that.
Final question comes from Heavenly. Maybe that's Heavenly, but spelled a bit funny. Following up from last week's question, now we are linked with Youssef Fofana as a defensive midfielder. Who do we bench, or are we selling a midfielder? Just adding a little bit to that. In the last week or so, we've been linked with, I think, 5 defensive midfielders. There's Samuele Ricci at Torino, Wallace at Udinese, Fofana at Monaco, Kefren Turan at OGC Nice, and the other one I think was Ibrahima Sissoko, maybe. But yeah, basically seems like we're in the market for a DM. Is that the right signing, first of all, positionally? And who do you want? And does it mean Benacer's off?
I don't think it means Benacer's off. I do think it's a good signing. I remember we sold Krunic in January. Not that it's like a big loss, but we are down a man in midfield. Yeah, I mean we're short a player. We never signed a DM over the last summer, so I think we still kind of just need it. And and Pobega, I mean he's been gone all season too. We might get rid of him in the summer, especially if we're including him in a deal for someone else, you know. So I wouldn't be shocked if we are just replacing him, or if we're just looking to bolster the squad. It's not like you have to sell someone to buy someone, you know?
Well, that's how it works at Milan. So
sometimes.
Thanks, Jerry. Now, there was a report from Gazetta that basically worked out, and maybe this was a tad wishful thinking, but the budget could be 130 million euros without any big sales. You know, from the sale of CDK, Salamakers is in good form for Bologna. Looks like he'll go for 10 mil. We've got a few more players out on loan for some cash. Champions League money's worth like 40 mil. And then if we're going to run deep in the Europa League, that'll get us 40 mil. So we could genuinely have a good budget. We know that most of it's going to the striker. Let's say the striker costs 50 and we've got 120 mil to spend. That's still two or three good investments on other positions without having to sell any star players. Then it gets to a point where it's like, if you sign a star player and we bring in an extra 80, 100 mil for someone, who are we spending it on? Like,
I mean, I think we'd need a defensive mid, a center back, probably another right back. But honestly, we don't have a backup left back. So, like, there's still work to be done. Like, we don't have a complete squad. So when you put our season in perspective, it's actually...
Jimenez, yeah, he could be promoted. That's but true. He's actually a natural right back. He's a right-footed player who's been playing on the left for the Primavera because we've got a load of right-backs. So, I was going to say, something that I noticed in the Fiorentina game, Coyote, who's been really good this season, has now been benched by Dodo.
Dodo's good.
Cheeky little bid for him in the summer, perhaps. You know, good young talent. Could bench Calabria in town, without a doubt. We need a replacement for Florenzi and all that, and Terracciano's vanished. God knows where he is. Answer to the question. We need a defensive midfielder, definitely, to shield the team. Bit of balance. Don't know who it's going to be. This is the position where I think I prefer to go domestically, to be honest. I think I would like someone like a Ricky, who has been so good for Torino. And we've been linked with him before. And Torino, we could throw them Pabega because we know they still like him. Like, there's stuff we could do there to make a deal happen. There are other options. I honestly think Wallace has been great as well. I mean, he's in his prime years. He's been a good player for Udinese over the years. I think I'd just like someone who knows about the pace of the league and how to control games. Let's wrap it up there, boys. Good ep. Thank you to everybody who has listened along and stuck with us during the international break. We'll be back next week. Obviously for a recap and I think a couple of previews. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, Maddie, cheers for joining.
Bye.
See you next week.
Goal! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio cuore!